Welcome to Family Talk with your hosts, psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson, along with Ryan Dobson and Luann Crane.
Welcome, everybody, to this third day in a three-part series here at Family Talk of a recorded speech given by my dad, Dr. James Dobson, back in February of 1998. He was speaking to a gathering of conservatives about the failure of the Republican Party to keep its pro-life, pro-family, and pro-moral commitment they made during the general election in 1994. You were, Dad, echoing the disappointment and irritation expressed by many voters over the abandonment by the GOP of issues that mattered greatly to that assembled group.
That goes right to the heart of it, Ryan.
Dr. and Ryan, really, to fully understand the speech given on that day, our listeners really should get copies of these 3 days of broadcasts, which we're featuring here, so that they can hear the speech in its entirety. Mm-hmm. That is available with our compliments to anyone who would ask. It's very easy. Just pick up the phone, 877-732-6825. Doctor, today we'll hear your concluding comments as you talk about what some people consider a betrayal of principle. I mean, you felt those words so deeply. Your voice actually broke a time or two at the conclusion. Explain what you were feeling at that point.
Well, Luann, the moral principles that I was defending there mean more to me than my own life. Mm. And that's not an overstatement. That's actually the way I feel about it. They involve the sanctity of human life. We've now sacrificed 50 million babies in this country alone. And the institution of marriage and the financial underpinnings on which the family is based and the welfare of children. Even more than all of that, they represent right and wrong and morality and immorality, and righteousness and unrighteousness is identified in Scripture. It goes directly to the heart of God. And the frustration that listeners will hear in my concluding remarks here is related to the disappointment of believing that we had elected men and women who understood those principles and would fight for them. And they said they would. Mm-hmm. And instead, it was business as usual, not only in the Republican Party, but certainly among the Democrats as well. That's what you're hearing in my voice.
Well, let's get right to it as we complete this series here with the concluding remarks of Dr. James Dobson, delivered on February 8, 1998.
What bothers me, too, is that the Republicans who say they don't have the votes also don't have the voice. See, this is maybe even more egregious to me, is that the other side is so passionate about what they believe, and they advance it, and they pursue it, and they teach it. In November the 8th, 1997, Bill Clinton did an absolutely outrageous thing. I mean, it was outrageous. He went to speak and give the dignity of his office to a group defined by their sexual perverse behavior, a homosexual rights group, and validated them and validated the things that they stand for, including the redefinition of marriage and all the other things that they stand for. And 2 days later, held a hate crimes conference at the White House in which Bill Clinton said that we need to revamp the curricula of all the schools in America to teach pro-homosexual concepts to kids. And he didn't put it in quite those words, but that's what he said. You know, we've always had the idea that parents control the education of their children. Here the president is telling us that we need to revamp the curriculum. And so I wait for the echo. Where are the Republican leaders who stand up and say, this is outrageous, we will not stand for it? There was not a peep of protest from a single Republican leader in the House or the Senate. Not one. Not the conservatives that you know and love. None of them had the courage to speak to that. They're so intimidated. They're so pinned down. And it was just incredible. Only Bill Bennett did it. Bill Bennett wrote an article in Weekly Standard disagreeing with the president on that and gave a very rational argument for it. He was the only one that I saw. Maybe you saw some of them. I waited for it. And I've since had Senator Ashcroft on my program and others, and I've said, Senator, where were you and where was everybody else? And he said, I should have spoken. Why don't they? I don't know. It's a lack of conviction that there is a boss to the universe and that there are moral standards that we are held to, and we need officials who will stand up and represent them. Speaking of Christine Todd Whitman, she got in trouble in November, as you know, and she was about to lose, and Republicans came tearing up there to her rescue. Christine Todd Whitman is the most liberal governor, or at least the most pro-abortion governor in the nation, and the Republican Party gave her $1.5 million to help pull her through, and these people went up to help her. Jack Kemp, John Kasich, Elizabeth Dole, Dan Quayle, whom you're going to hear from tonight, I hope you will ask him, Steve Forbes, whom I hope you will ask tonight, Colin Powell, Jim Nicholson, Terry Branstad, Kay Bailey Hutchinson, Peggy Noonan, went to New Jersey to campaign for the woman who vetoed the legislation that would have protected those children. In one clinic in New Jersey, 1,500 kids are killed by partial birth abortion each year. I don't understand that. And I don't understand also why a month ago Republicans went to Indian Wells and dealt away this issue, a 78% issue on the matter of campaign financing. What that conveys to the constituency I'm talking about is that principle does not matter. It's party over principle. That there are some things that you stand for, whether it is popular or politically astute to do so or not. That's what that pro-moral community stands for. And yet, it seemed to me that what I heard from the Republicans in Indian Wells was, we cannot have power if we stand on principle. Please don't take away our power. What good is it to have power if you don't use it for good? Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody. I will wind this up. I just have to say that the two phrases that came out of Indian Wells that we've heard before really do get to a lot of people I know. It's big tents and litmus tests. Do you know that the Democrats never use those words? You never hear a Democrat use the word litmus test unless he's referring to a Republican. You never hear them talking about the big tent. Why? Because they rarely abandon their moral constituency or immoral constituency. They're always there for them, with few exceptions. Bill Clinton is still hanging with the partial birth abortion thing, even though the American Medical Association says he's off the wall. But he hangs with it because they don't disappoint their constituency. Republicans use those two phrases when they're getting ready to abandon their core values and they're embarrassed about it and they've got to give a rationale for doing it. Big tent, litmus test. Let me tell you guys something. What are we talking about here? We're not talking about partial birth abortion. We're talking about murder during delivery. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about infanticide. And this baby, this 6, 7, 8 pound baby, is delivered. All but the head. Brimming with life. Fully viable. Can suckle. Can look you in the eye. Can respond. And so quickly all that humanness begins to unfold. delivered all but the last 2 or 3 inches. Roll that baby over. He's unanesthetized. And you pick up scissors and you cram them into the back of his head, and his whole body stiffens. And then they insert a powerful suction device into the back of the head and suck the brains out of that baby and deliver a dead baby. I want to tell you all something from my heart. There is no tent big enough for me and people who will do that. See, this is exactly what happened in 1858. It's what happened to the Whig Party. They got out of touch with the moral fiber of the nation. They ignored them. They didn't listen to them. And the whole party disintegrated. And a Republican Party was born in the crucible of conviction and courage and moral rightness, righteousness. That's where the Republican Party started. It took a stand against slavery in a day that cost 600,000 lives in a civil war, but they knew it was wrong, and they took a stand on it. Whether win, lose, or draw, that's God's business. They took a stand on what was right. If the party has left that, and it is now going to mouth these things every 2 years and then go on to something else, I think we need to look for another. And it would be tragic if that happened. I don't want that to happen. There are many state houses of government where Republicans will suffer if that happens. It will be a disaster for the country. But somebody said, if you do that, you have no voice at all. I don't think we have a voice now. I can't hear the voice. I came here today to say two things to you. One is to beg you. I beg you shamelessly to use your influence on the party at this critical stage of our history. I beg you to talk to them about what's at stake here, because they've laid the foundation for a revolt, and I don't think they even know it, because they're so out of touch with the people that I'm talking about. The other thing I came to say to you, and I really am through, is that there is very good news on the home front. We are winning this battle despite political leadership. You saw the poll in the New York Times on abortion. People are coming our way. They're moving this way. You go back to the late 80s, we'll say in 1986, 87, no one foresaw that the whole Soviet empire was getting ready to collapse. I didn't read one Sovietologist who said, this thing is getting ready to blow up. Other than Ronald Reagan, who said that we would transcend communism, I heard no one say, this thing is built on sand. This thing could, the whole thing could come down. No one saw that. No one perceived that the wall was getting ready to fall. But it was a house of cards, and it was ready to come down. I have reason to believe that modern liberalism is also built on the sand. The American people don't go with the National Organization for Women. They don't believe Patricia Ireland speaks for them. The women of this country don't identify with her. She's noisy, she gets a lot of press, but the American people are not with her. They have, as they claim, 250,000 members. Goodness, we've got 5 million on our list of names. 250,000 is nothing. The people are not with her. They're not with the American Civil Liberties Union. They don't believe that crazy nonsense. They're not with People for the American Way. They're not with NARAL. They're not with all these organizations. They're still deeply conservative because there is something written on their hearts that they cannot get away from. And if we simply had a moral leader or a party of moral leadership who had the courage, like Ronald Reagan did with the Soviets, despite everything the press threw at him for calling it the evil empire. If we had people in government who stood up for these things we believed and didn't dance around and try to apologize and try to avoid criticism by the press, but went right to the heart of it, this is right and I stand on it. If no one believes it, we could win this thing and we could do it fairly quickly, in my view. And what we need are people of courage. I started with a scripture. I'm going to end one. I've held you too long, and I'm sorry. This scripture in the Old Testament, for me, sums it all up. In one verse, sums up where we are now and where the people have been from this time, 4,000 years ago, to today. It's all right here. This struggle between good and evil. Only two ways of looking at it. God is or God isn't. He has a standard or he doesn't. There is right and wrong or there isn't. And we have a choice, the true pro-choice. And here's what it is from the 30th chapter of Deuteronomy, the 19th verse. I love this verse. This day, I call heaven. And earth as witnesses against you that I have set before you a choice, life and death. Blessings and curses. Got to make a choice. It's one or the others. No in between. Now choose life so that you and your children may live. God bless the families of this country and God bless America. Thank you.
You've been listening to a speech given by my dad in 1998 to a group of concerned and, frankly, irritated conservatives about their abandonment by the Republican Party on the pro-family, pro-life, pro-moral issues that were primary in their election promises and that had gotten them elected in the first place. Dad, that was powerful to hear your voice crack with emotion shows how much you care about these issues. Can you take us back to that February day? What happened after you spoke that day?
Well, to be honest, Ryan, it turned my world upside down. That speech was given to conservative leaders, as you indicated, and it was intended to be given in a closed-door setting with no reporters and no outsiders present. That was the understanding. In fact, the New York Times had a transcript of that speech by that afternoon and carried it in, I think, the evening edition and certainly the next morning. And my picture was put on the cover of U.S. News and World Report along with a cover story written by Michael Gerson, who went on to become a speechwriter for President George W. Bush. I was on the Larry King Live program shortly thereafter for the entire hour. And many other news outlets. So it offered me many opportunities to express what I was feeling. But I tell you, I was running my wheels off. I also met with Republicans in both the House and Senate in private meetings after that. So it was a breathless time.
Mm-hmm. Well, in fact, Dad, you were running so hard and fast during that time that you ended up having a stroke.
Well, I did. 3 months later, on June 16th of 1998, I was just totally exhausted. The Lord was gracious, and I recovered essentially 24 hours later. And my doctors tell me they've never seen that happen because I was not able to speak at all and had weakness on my right side. And 24 hours later, there was very little evidence that I had even even had a cerebral event, as they call it. So God was good to me.
I remember that time so well, Doctor. We were all thanking the Lord for his touch on your life. Let's tie the events of that era to where we are today and the election that just occurred on November 2nd of this year. In some ways, what happened here in 2010 is like, as Yogi Berra put it, deja vu all over again, isn't it?
Well, I pray not, Lou Ann. I do hope that the conservative pro-life representatives and senators will stand by their convictions and their promises and will not spend the nation into bankruptcy and abandon the moral principles on which they have run. By the way, let me add just a little parenthesis here that I predicted during that speech that Republicans would not stay in power if they ignored or lost touch with the people who had sent them there. And I have the numbers in front of me. At the time that I gave this speech, Republicans in the House had 228 members. And from there, 2006 to 10 years later, 2008, they lost 72 seats. They lost seats almost every 2 years, every national election for that 10-year period. And then this year, on November the 2nd, they gained 64. Now, what can we expect from this 112th Congress? It is not entirely clear. The signs so far are both positive and negative, and we don't know which direction Congress is going to go. Some people are fighting for earmarks, saying, well, it isn't much money. Well, it's $15 billion. Oh. Since when did that not amount to much money? And there are very prominent Republicans who want to preserve those earmarks because it helps them get elected again, I suppose. But there are others like Senator Jim DeMint who are opposing earmarks tooth and nail. I hope he wins that argument because it is a symbol to the American people as to whether or not we're serious about righting the ship. But still, just read an article that suggests that GOP congressional leadership will probably faint right while legislating closer to the center.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me. And if that's true, we could be in for trouble again. Why would they abandon the people who elected them into office?
It is the atmosphere in Washington. I have watched it for years. We call it Potomac fever, where people who go off to make a difference and they've got a set of principles and they want to make a difference, then they get criticized in the Washington Post and the New York Times and they get embarrassed a few times and people start yelling at them from the newspapers at home and they gradually drift toward the middle or to the far left, as many of them do.
Because apparently re-election is more important than principles.
I'm afraid that is often true. The most important thing is hanging on to one seat in either the House or the Senate and in not doing anything to put it in jeopardy. That's why we really do need to keep an eye on the people we've sent there.
That's right.
And this would probably be a good time for people to communicate with their representatives to let them know what they are expecting.
And we will have some links at myfamilytalk.com for how listeners can get in touch with their own congressmen. But Doctor, really, right here in closing, what can we as citizens do about all of this?
Lou Ann, there's nothing more important than prayer. I believe in prayer. I want to tell you that my wife Shirley, being chairman of the National Day of Prayer, had a prayer summit the weekend before the election. And people came and they prayed all weekend. In fact, there was a group of them that prayed all night long on Saturday night before the end of that conference on Sunday. And I believe the Lord hears those prayers.
I do too.
They were not the only ones praying. There were people praying all over this country. And the prayer movement is alive and well, and Shirley will attest to that fact. And this is a time for us to be praying for our leaders in Washington at such a critical moment. This country is still on the brink. And we need to ask the Lord to rescue us at this critical time in history.
Well, it's so important. Doctor, listeners can learn more about the National Day of Prayer and even sign up for some weekly prayer tips at our website, myfamilytalk.com. And of course, we also have links to other pro-family organizations that are helping all of us hold our elected officials accountable. All of that at myfamilytalk.com.
Luann, as every leader of a nonprofit organization will tell you, giving at the end of the year is critical because that's what carries you through the summer months. Even the spring months can be difficult, and we would certainly appreciate it if our listeners who have identified with what we've been talking about today or every day, if they can help us, we would certainly appreciate it. And please be in prayer for us, too.
There's nothing people can do that's more important than that. If you would like a complimentary copy of this 3-day series for yourself or to pass along to someone who needs it, our number is 877-732-6825. Again, 877-732-6825.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us tomorrow when we'll talk about teaching your teen to say no to premarital sex. Do not miss it.